So the number one thing that I encountered on my trip to America is a very common thing. I'm pretty sure all of us have felt it. Certainly we felt it this year, and certainly we felt it probably in previous years, which is kids that don't know how to bridge the gap between like what they want to do and actually becoming that person. So when you talk to guys a lot, so what do you hear from them? You hear like, I don't know why. I asked them like, why weren't you more in high school? And they have all these answers, and the answers involve society, and you know, it's hard at home, and different things, and friends, and you know, I've kind of been waiting to go to Israel. I don't think I'm alone when I say that there are probably many of us, even in this room, that have a hard time bridging the gap between who we are and who we want to be. So take, for example, the classic guy who's dieting, yeah? So he can diet for a week or two or three, or even 4 or 5 months, but then what happens? He just somehow runs out of steam. Or a guy, you know, we see it with addiction all the time. I'm going to beat this addiction. You know, people, what do they say? Quitting is easy. I've done it hundreds of times. You know, like the classic line. So, you know, a guy who's a smoker, you know, and he really wants to quit. He hates smoking, but he just can't quit. He just can't quit. He knows it's bad for him. He knows he's shaving years off of his life, but he just can't quit. And he's tried to quit hundreds of times, but somehow it just never seems to amount to anything. It never seems to materialize. So the topic of today's shiur, which I think is a very important one, certainly relevant for us, and I don't know if you guys realize this, but there's 6 weeks left of the Zman. You know, I was just telling Yosef today, I remember when we just got off the plane. I remember when we just got off the plane, we were going to the Kotel together. It was awkward. We were just each other for the first time, you know? Like, who is this guy? You know, like, what's going on over here? You know, there's 6 weeks left of the Zman. So I'm sure that some of us have done more than we ever thought possible. And I'm sure that some of us at the same time also feel like, I even wanted more for myself. Like, how do I make that happen? Why is it that we so often fall short of our goals? So I guess the topic of the shiur is, how do we empower ourselves? Where did we lose focus? How did that happen? And this is, by the way, in anything. It's not just in terms of achievement, like scholastically here in yeshiva, or even in terms of Yiras Shamayim, but even especially with midos, right? Like, how many times do you say, I'm not going to get angry? And then before you know it, you're angry. You know, how many times do you say, it happens to me all the time. Like, I'm not going to lose my cool. Next time, I manage not to lose my cool. The time after that, I'm able to contain it for a little bit longer. And the third time, I'm done. I'm so sick of containing myself. That's it. You're done. I'm going to tell you. It's not a good way of being. So how do we bridge this gap? So there's a culture in the world today which is, we deserve everything, right? The commercials of the Super Bowl, right? And weren't even good. But the commercials of the Super Bowl basically are there to tell you, and we've discussed this concept before, this is what you need, this is what you deserve, right? You go to anybody, you know, you deserve a colder beer, you know, you deserve the best entertainment brought right to your door, you deserve to have the best chips, how could you live without Doritos, right? Your skin deserves the best care, you deserve the best car, was that? Obviously the best beard. By the way, how many people thought of me during that commercial? Am I the only one? It's okay. I'm happy to be the only one. Right away I was on that. I was like, the best beard. That's me. You know, everyone deserves these things. And the question is, why? Why do we deserve any of that? If you actually think about it, you deserve none of it. You deserve none of it. And if I deserve it so much, how come when I walk into that car dealership, they don't just give me the car for free? You walk into the car dealership and go, I deserve to be driving a Lexus. And the guy goes, absolutely. And for $30,000, that Lexus can be yours. If I deserve it, you should give it to me. The Torah says, I don't deserve it. They're selling to me more than just a car. They're selling to me a concept. And it's a concept that we have bought into. And the concept is narcissism. The concept is, you deserve, not because you've achieved, you deserve simply because you are. And the truth of the matter is that it's not that way. So take, for example, a person who needs a break. Yeah, you have a person in a job who says, I deserve a break, right? The truth is, you don't deserve a break. They're paying you to work. Why does a job give you a break? A job gives you a break in order so that you could be a more effective employee. So they're paying you to be there from 9 to 6 every single day. They give you a 45-minute break for lunch. It's not because you deserve a break. You worked hard all morning. You deserve a break. No. You get a break because we want you to be productive in the afternoon. That's why you get a break. Like the mother who says, I need to take some time for myself. She's not taking time for herself. She's saying, in order for me to be an effective mother, I need to take a break. I need to lie down. I need to do these things. I need to indulge myself a little bit because otherwise I won't be able to do the things I need to do. So the starting point of where self has broken down is I deserve. The answer is not that you deserve. The answer is, if you really want to be a strong person, ask yourself who you are for. The famous story of the Balatanya, that one of the Hasidim came to him and the Chassid was telling him a list of all the things that he needed. And one after another, Rebbe, I need this and I need that, I need Parnasa and I need that, and all these different things. And the Rebbe said to him at the end, he goes, now I've heard all the things that you needed, but I haven't heard once anything that you are needed for. And there's a difference between needing and what am I needed for. Because if I need something, it's in order to empower me because I'm needed for something else. So like Chazal say, the best life insurance policy is to have a lot of people relying on you. So a person, for example, who's a big Baal Tzedakah, he's got a great life insurance policy because if the Rabbeinu Shalom says, I want to take him out of this world, he knows, hey, there's 5, 6, 7, 8 people that are totally reliant on him. The Rav of my shul told an awesome story this Shabbos about a friend of his who I guess has a decent amount of money, and he was making a wedding. So he wanted to send an envelope over to somebody else. So he called another friend of the Rav's and he said, do me a favor, can you bring an envelope with cash in it? Can you bring an envelope? He's making a wedding. I know what it's like to make a wedding because I'm in the middle of making a wedding now. So take this envelope full of cash and bring it to this guy. He's making a wedding. A week later, after the wedding, he got another phone call. He said, can you do me a favor? I need you to bring another envelope to this guy. He said, now I realize that there's after costs of the wedding. You think it's over by the wedding? No, there's after costs. And because I have after costs, I'm sure this guy has after costs. I want you to deliver another letter. And it's a tremendous amount of chesed that this person did, that he's sitting and thinking of what another person needs. One of the highlights of my trip was when I was in Los Angeles. I stay by a Talmud of mine in Los Angeles who treats me, you can't imagine. Guys, this Talmud, he's one of my dearest, dearest Talmidim. And I don't want to say his name, I don't want to embarrass him. But this Talmud, I want you to know he takes care of me like you cannot imagine. And it's I'm so touched by it. And this time we were having dinner, he and one other Talmud of mine, and a third Talmud showed up at the door that I didn't actually know was coming, and it was a surprise, and he came, and he pulled me into the other room, and he handed me a check. And I said, what is this for? It was a decent sized check, actually. And I said, what is this for? He goes, Rebbe, this is for you, you know, this is for you, for the yeshiva, whatever, you know? And it was so sensitive. And I was so proud of him because he said to me, he said, look, I want to be needed for something else. I'm not going to be only as big as my Dalet Amos. And that is, again, if we refocus, and we're gonna learn a lot in this particular shiur how to refocus, but I want you to ask yourself a question. Who am I needed for? Right? So again, obviously your mothers love you, so you say, well, my mom needs me. Well, why does your mother need you? Because she needs somebody to, you know, to love unconditionally. I don't know if any of you have siblings, but if you have siblings, she's got them. Who are you needed for means, what am I using my life for? What am I giving to somebody else? That's a very powerful question. It's a very profound question. See, I had a very good chinuch. I was very lucky growing up. I got to be part of a yeshiva in sixth, seventh, and eighth grade. I got to be part of a yeshiva called Yeshiva Darche Torah. One of the amazing parts about Yeshiva Darche Torah is they take in special needs kids into the yeshiva. And not special needs necessarily, though they have them also in terms of, you know, scholastically, but special needs in terms of they have boys with Down syndrome, they have boys with, you know, muscular dystrophy. Unfortunately, the boys with muscular dystrophy have since passed away. I knew them well. You know, there are boys with cerebral palsy, and there are Talmidim and Darche that are literally taking care of their friends. And in the high school when they're dorming, so they're actually, they get them dressed in the morning. And I want to tell you something. There's something very powerful about being a part of a yeshiva where you're taught, it's part of the fabric of the yeshiva, don't only be for yourself, be for another. It's something very powerful in our chinuch. And I have to tell you that I had the schus in eighth grade. There was a kid who wasn't able to go to yeshiva. He was probably retarded on some level. I don't know exactly what his IQ was, but he was probably retarded looking back on it. And this kid would come to Darche every Sunday. Now, I was not a kid that could sit still. I was not a kid that could sit in the classroom. But this kid every Sunday would come to Darche, and it was my job to take him around all Sunday. So Sunday morning, instead of being in class, I would take this kid around. And I want to tell you something. Who was helping whom? Was I helping him? I was helping him. He could be in school. I want you to know that I still remember that lesson today. It's part of the reason that I'm here in this classroom. It's part of the reason that I'm here giving shir to you. It's because I was taught at an early stage in life, life is not only about yourself. Life is bigger than you. It's about taking care of another. Can you be big enough to take care of another? That was the gift that my school gave me. That was something, an incredible gift. I want to explain to you in a deep way what the concept is of idolatry. What is idolatry? Idolatry is an affront to human dignity. I want to say that in a clear way so you guys understand what I'm talking about. When a person worships an idol, and by the way, we'll see that we worship many idols in our life. When a person worships an idol, that is an affront to human dignity. Why? Because we have to talk about two different selves. The true self and what we'll call the not as true self, the false self. Okay? The true self is inspired. The true self is dignified. The true self challenges to get the next achievement, to be a better person. You've all accessed that true self at times. That true self loves to connect to a higher source. The true self sees a challenge and doesn't shrink from it. And even when it fails, the true self says, I'm a personal growth person. So this is just a setback, but it doesn't push me backwards. On the other hand, because when you're involved in the true self, you recognize I am not going to be this big. I'm going to be bigger than this big. So if I only take up this Dalet Amos, that's no good. The true self says, go build a family. The true self says, build a meaningful life. And therefore, as we've spoken about many times this year, the true self necessarily has responsibilities and obligations. That's the nature of the true self. Because the true self is inspired, because it's challenging, because it seeks to be bigger than itself, it ipso facto gets responsibilities and obligations. And the true self demands that it have opportunities to grow outside of itself. What's the truest obligation? The truest obligation of the true self is that it be dignified. So there's halachos, for example, that reflect this. Is a person allowed to degrade themselves? No. There's all sorts of halachas that are involved in kavod abrius. What were those halachas about? Those halachas are that even in the privacy of your own bedroom, when nobody else is looking, there's a certain way to be dressed. There's a certain way to act. Why is there a certain way to act? Why is there a certain way to be dressed? Because the Torah is teaching you, be your truest self. Be dignified. The way that we speak is such a powerful... We've spoken about the power of speech. The way that we speak is such an incredible ability to create relationships. The dignified person uses his speech to create relationships. The person who's not acting in a dignified way uses his speech as a weapon, uses his speech to speak inappropriately or about inappropriate things. I have a Rebbe who is one of the tzaddikim nistarim of the generation. People don't know who he is, but he's mamish a tzaddik. And this Rebbe, when he gives a bracha to people, it's mamish mekuyam, and it's unbelievable. I could tell you stories, I'm not going to tell you stories now, but when this Rebbe says something, guys, that bracha, it comes true. It's incredible. And even things that you wouldn't think should come true, when it comes out of his mouth, they come true. Because as Chazal say, a tzaddik is gozer, and I believe that he has the definition of a tzaddik. And I want to tell you, you know what's amazing about him? You know why I believe that his brachos have real kiyam? Because when he was young and married, he took a tainus dibur on himself for an entire year. For an entire year. I said to him, Rebbe, you didn't talk for a year? He said, well, I only spoke about important things. I said, weren't you married? Yeah, sometimes you have a tendency with your wife not to speak about the most important things. So he said to me, yeah, but when you're married, even the unimportant things can become important. And for an entire year, he watched his mouth. I said, Rebbe, that must have been so hard. He looked at me and he smiled and he goes, yeah, the first year was very hard. The first year. The first year. That means he's been doing it for so long. The first year. This is a guy, when you speak to him, you say, Rebbe, how you doing? He goes like this. Good, Baruch Hashem. It's very awkward to have a conversation with him because he always pauses to think. He thinks about everything that's going to come out of his mouth. Isn't that a crazy thing? Imagine if I thought about even 2% of the things that come out of my mouth. I would never be able to talk to you guys. You know, Yosef, what would I have to say? You know, half of our Bekiah Shir would be out of commission. You know, like, nothing. No, it's unbelievable. A person has to be so careful what comes out of his mouth. But Rabosa, I want to teach you. This is the lesson. This is where it comes from. How to learn how to speak? How do we learn how to act? It comes from a basic dignity of self. It comes from a basic dignity of self. And this is what idolatry is. Idolatry is the lack of that dignity. So when you worship something that's beneath you, you are taking something and you're saying, I'm lower. And that's why when a person used to worship idols and they worshipped Baal Pa'ar, for example, they would have to do all sorts of undignified activities. You know, in order to worship Baal Pa'ar, what do you have to do? You have to go to the bathroom in front of him. That's a disgraceful act. It's a disgraceful act. But there was a certain lack of dignity that was involved. It was a certain subservience and submission to that idol that was lower than myself. And if you think about it, and I want you to pause right now and think about it as I'm speaking, I want you to think about what in our lives have we put into ourselves that's making us less dignified. And if you think about that, you'll start to notice all of these things that are totally undignified activities. They're beneath me, but I don't hold myself like that. I don't hold myself as a dignified person. And you should know that that is a root cause of so many of the things that we're unable to achieve. It's because we don't see ourselves as dignified. The story of Rav Shlomo Freifeld, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, the founding Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshiva Shoyashev, the first Kir of Yeshiva in America. Rav Freifeld, one time, there was a group of Talmidim that they got together for one of their buddies. They were making him Sheva Brachos. And they put together, they were so proud of themselves. They didn't have any money. So what did they do? They went out, they bought deli, and they made sandwiches. They made sandwiches. And they were so proud. They showed Rav Freifeld the sandwiches that they made for the Sheva Brachos. And Rav Freifeld pointed out to them, he said, it's not dignified for a Sheva Brachos. It's not a dignified food to have a pastrami sandwich on rye. I remember that I had a Rebbe in 8th grade. His name was Rabbi Grossman. Now, again, I wasn't mekabel the musser. And out of Yom HaZeh, if I do eat a slice of pizza, I don't eat it the way that he taught me. But I want you to know that I remember that he taught us how to eat a slice of pizza. And I remember him expressing this. And at the time, I thought he was a little crazy for saying it. But you know what? He's right. You ever see people eating a slice of pizza? First, they fold it in half. And they eat it like they're putting it into their mouth. And it's like with their tongue, they're lashing out and chopping every last piece of cheese and stuffing it. You see it, but I'll go slice of pizza. You know, and you eat seminary girls see a slice of pizza. Oh my God, it's like a wood chopper. You know, it's like, and there's one of those things I probably shouldn't have said. You know, it's an undignified way of eating. It's not dignified. Yeah, how we dress.
How did he eat?
He ate it with a fork and a knife. And you know when I started realizing that it wasn't so crazy? When there was a Seinfeld episode about George Costanza eating his little dessert with a fork and a knife. And I realized there's a dignified way of eating. There's a dignified way of speaking. There's a dignified way of holding yourself. And I remember that, and even now as I'm talking to you, I remember all these people, that they were dignified people. People on my block, wealthy people, that the way that they walked was a little bit different. Now again, that's not necessarily true dignity. That might be false gaiva. But there was a certain dignity of a way that a man should hold himself, the way that a tzelem Elokim should hold himself. This was the foundation of the altar of Slabodka's Musar. The altar of Slabodka began every shmuz talking about the godless Adam. Why was he always talking about how great man is? Because he was trying to instill a virtue in you guys that I realize now, this whole year I haven't spoken about. How could it be? This is the foundation. This is like something I've been trying to work on myself all year and I haven't shared it with you. The dignity of man as a tzelem Elokim is paramount. That's where it begins. And so often in life we're degrading ourselves. Let's think about the things that we do. It's an animalistic thing. It is. It's an animalistic thing to go crazy. The Rambam even talks about running in public as an act of a lunatic. It's true. If you think about it, running is not, it's not a dignified way of being. If you saw the President of the United States running, I'm not talking about running like to go out for a jog, but if you saw him running for a bus, it's a little undignified, no? There's halachas of how a Talmud Chacham has to act in public, and there's halachas that we have to treat him. It's all in the name of dignity. It's all in the name of Tzelem Elokim. Why is worshipping an idol so bad? After all, if you think about it, and I know Moshe's looking at me, and I know Moshe's asking this question, he's saying, when I described idolatry, it sounded very much like our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Subservience, submission, right? What's the difference between an idol and HaKadosh Baruch Hu? After all, at its core, it sounds like the same thing. What makes one worship so good and one worship so bad? Right? That, in fact, in the Aseres HaDibros, what does God tell us? I am God, your God, you shall have no other gods before you. That's a strange way of introducing himself to us. I am God, your God, don't have any other gods. First of all, it sounds like those other gods are real. It sounds like, you better choose me. It's like Hilu, the wife that says, hey, I don't want you looking at her. You know, what is HaKadosh Baruch Hu telling us? Look at me, only focus on me. What is he afraid? He's afraid we're going to go to them? They have no reality. What's God so afraid of? So what's the difference between real worship and counterfeit worship? So here it is. This is the gift. This is it. I'll give it to you right now. Take it with you, boys, because this is something you could have for the rest of your life. The real worship, it ennobles you. It makes you bigger. Like, for example, a teacher, or better yet, a coach, or better yet, a drill sergeant that tells you what to do, yeah? And they challenge you. We all know, who are the best teachers? We didn't necessarily like them the best, but who are the best teachers? The ones that got maximum production out of us. The ones that challenged us. The one that said, I want this paper, not good enough. You could do better, right? The best coach, I had the best coach. Oh man, was he a bad person. He was so tough on me. I tell you, this guy was so tough that even one time I blew a layup in gym. It wasn't even during a practice. It certainly wasn't even during a game. It was in gym. And it was in Rambam gym. So it's not even real gym. It's just pickup basketball, yeah? I blew a layup. And why did I blow the layup? I blew the layup because instead of going off the glass, I decided to be a punk and finger roll it in. And it went off the back iron. And he blew his whistle and he chewed me out in front of everybody. And I remember I said to him, I'm like, it's not even a practice. He's like, but you build bad habits in gym, you're going to build bad habits in practice, you're going to build bad habits in the game, and that's why. And he started ripping me in public. And you know what? At the time, I really didn't appreciate it. I'll tell you one thing I never did again. I never went for that finger roll. I went off glass every single time. He was a great coach because he pushed me to be better. What's a great drill sergeant? What's a great drill sergeant? A great drill sergeant tells you precisely everything you need to do, and if you don't do it, he gets on you. Again and again and again. And at the end, you don't like that drill sergeant. Nobody likes that drill sergeant, but at the end, you love him. At the end, you love him because he pushed you. Yeah? Because he ennobled you. Because he made you bigger than yourself. Here's the thing about worship. Worship is bigger than knowledge. Worship is bigger than knowledge. Because if I know something, I start to get close to it. So for example, I know a lot about the Knicks. It's not a great thing to know about this year. Yeah, the one time that my boy doesn't bet with me on the Bucks, they lose. Okay, the Knicks are. I knew exactly when to hold, when to fold. Unfortunately, you don't know as well. Yeah, but when you know something, I'm sorry, Yosef. You know, listen, you could have gotten something, but instead, whatever. You're a Bucks fan, so it doesn't matter. But fear the deer, fear the beard. But the it goes like this, guys. When you know something, you get closer to it. Lerone, how close are you to the Lakers? You know so much about the Lakers. You're close to the Lakers, right? But imagine if you worship something. When you worship something, it's bigger than just knowing it. When you know something, you start to move closer to it. When you know a lot about something, you're really close to it, but you never become intimate with it. Just by knowing something doesn't make you intimate with it. When you know something, it brings you close. So for example, when you're dating, yeah? So when you're dating, you learn about a person, you know a lot about them. So what does that do? It starts to draw you closer to them. But I want to tell you, that's not as powerful as worship. Because with knowing, you can only get this close. You can only get this close. But when you worship something, what you're doing is even bigger. You are bringing that inside of you. So now I ask you, what are you bringing inside of yourself? When you worship the Ribbono Shel Olam, you're bringing the single most powerful thing you can bring inside of yourself. The expansion of you. It's like this. Why get married? I always tell this to the guys. Why get married? Nothing good can come from it. Nothing good can come from it. First of all, it's going to cost you a tremendous amount of money. And think about how much money. I have a buddy of mine. He's not married. He has no intention of getting married. He's working in, I don't want to say what he's working in, because whatever, this might go public, and if it does, it might be Lashon Hara. He's working. He has a good job. He has no intention of getting married. He's not. He doesn't even know if he considers himself Jewish anymore. So he's certainly not observant, yeah? Eats on Yom Kippur and nothing. He's an amazing person. I love him. He's a dear friend of mine, but not an observant Jew anymore. This guy, he's living on so little. He's living on so little. His money lasts him. He says, he works like a couple of days a week. It's a joke. He's living somewhere in Europe. He's living in like a king's palace. You know, it's unbelievable how much money this guy, he doesn't need that much in his life. You need $250,000 a year to be poor in America if you're going to have a family. To be poor. Because after taxes and after yeshiva tuition and after your mortgage and of course after your cars and these days with the heating bills and the gas bills and the electric bills, you need $250,000 to be poor. Do you realize how much money you're going to spend on your family? My father always says he had a goal to retire before he turned 50. At 49, he had enough money to retire. I remember he looked at me at 49, he goes, I'm ready to retire. He didn't retire, kept going, but he said, I'm ready to retire. He said, but I could have been retired at 42 if it wasn't for your mother's spending. Yeah, and so he was being totally serious, you know. He said it probably cost him 7 years just to be married to my mother. And again, and if he wouldn't have been married and if he wouldn't have had kids, he probably could have been retired by the time he was in his late 30s. You know, he had enough money for the rest of his life. Why get married? Why have kids? Oh, it must be that we're going to get married and have kids because of all the nachas that you have brought to your parents. And I see those knowing smiles. Chesky's like, I don't know what you're talking about, Rebbe. You know, like, you know, I met your daddy. He has nachas from you. Why are you smiling so much? You know, but it must be, it's because of all the nachas that we brought from our parents. No, come on. Come on. Think about it. It wasn't that long ago that you were 16 years old living in your parents' house trying to sneak whatever you could by them. Your parents are not as dumb as you think, by the way. They're very smart at looking the other way. You think it wasn't hard? I remember a conversation between my mother and my father. I don't know if any of you guys have ever had anything like this. I came back from I don't know if there's any other New Yorkers here that they did this, but I managed to convince my parents to let me go to Florida for winter vacation without them. Yeah, I don't know if anybody else. Hedlund's smiling. Like, I don't know if you're the guy I was thinking about, man. But I remember I convinced them, and I went to Miami. I convinced them to get me to go to my grandparents in Boca, you know, and then it was just, you
everyone
know.
Has the ground.
Everyone has. I just went, you know the move. Everyone knows the move. I went to my grandparents, and then I called my friends to pick me up. You know the move. And, like, my grandmother was, like, half out of it already, you know, so, like, they didn't know what was going on. You know, and I remember I came back, and I remember that there was a time when I started growing my hair much longer, and I started parting my hair a little bit differently. It was much more, like, it became apparent to my parents, at least to my mother, and certainly my father. The truth is he probably knew even before that I wasn't going in the direction that they wanted me to go in. So I overheard a conversation between my mother and my father. My mother's like, we have to tell him to get a haircut, and this is, I don't know what he's doing. And my father's like, let it go. Let it go. Let it go. You got to know how to look the other way. Now, I remember I'm hearing this conversation going, yes, you know, like I won, you know. But the truth is that there was something in me at that point that was creating a problem for them. It was creating a problem for them. So why get married? Why have a family? And the answer is, and listen very carefully now, because this is something you're going to want to take in. The answer is because what would your life be without it? Sure, you'll have a tremendous amount of money. Of course, you're all going to be matzliach. But what value does your life have? Because it's only going to be as big as you. When you get married, you attach yourself to another. When you have a family, you become even bigger. The goal, and this is it. This is it. Remember, we started off saying you deserve nothing. But what you have the opportunity for is to be bigger than yourself. That's the opportunity. That's it. That's the opportunity. You want that opportunity? Here's how you do it. Worship something bigger than yourself. What's the biggest thing you can worship? The Ribbono Shel Olam. He's infinitely big. How do we do that? We tap into the part of ourselves that's divine. We expand that. And now we're leading a life that's bigger than my own Dalet Amos. That's an enormous opportunity. That's an opportunity that you can't get just by focusing on yourself. You know what I mean?
What about the idols, though?
Oh, and when it comes to an idol, and I'm worshiping an idol, what does that mean? I'm also taking something into myself. And that thing that I'm taking into myself, it's debasing me. It's degrading me. It's saying, not only are you not going to be as big as yourself, you're going to be smaller than that. So it's taking the dignity that's inherent in all of man, and it's squashing it. So think about it. Think about the things in your life. Think about the things that you worship, because you all worship something. And it's not necessarily only Hashem. Yeah, I worship Hashem. Sure, I get up, I go to davening now, Rebbe. Sure, I learn, yeah. But think about what else in your life you're worshiping. Think about, again, so many people are worshiping, and I really mean worshiping. They're worshiping sports. Again, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with sports, but to worship it, to make it the foundation of your life, there are people, there was never such a thing when I was growing up. When I was growing up, you had whatever game games were on television. There wasn't cable. Yeah, you had whatever games were on television. Now you have the package, right? The NFL package, the NBA package, the MLB package, right? So you see people watching the games. It's wild. I could go, and there are people that do this. They can go, they're going to start, especially in Los Angeles, a little bit easier because you can start earlier in the day. Football games start a little bit earlier in Los Angeles, right? From 10 o'clock in the morning, you could be watching football. Los Angeles doesn't even have a team. There are people 10 o'clock in the morning, they start watching the games. And then one after another, there's overlap, no problem. I got picture in picture, no problem. I'm DVRing it. I can literally watch every NFL game. So come Monday morning, I'm exhausted. Sunday was so hard. What did you do? Well, I sat in my chair. I watched football. You know, if you have the pizza delivered to you and you have an easy chair that has a cooler in the thing, I literally haven't moved. For all intents and purposes, I am dead to the world in that time. Why? What are you worshiping? What are you worshiping? You don't think that's called worship? That's called worship. And you love it. And I don't blame you. But for what? How did that make you bigger than yourself? Because, by the way, that's what sports is. Sports is all about attaching yourself to something bigger than yourself. That's why we get up when great things happen at games, right? As soon as you know in a great moment, you've all been at games like this, I hope, because it's an amazing opportunity. Have you ever been at a moment in a game where it was a great moment and you knew it was a great moment? It's the ninth inning, it's the 3-2 count, there's runners on first and third, and you're down two, right? In that great moment, what does everybody in the stadium do? We stand up. We stand up. Why do we stand up? Because we're about to be bigger than ourselves. I've said this tons of times to you guys. We're about to be bigger than ourselves. It's the counterfeit, though. Because actually, you're part of nothing. You haven't done anything bigger than yourself. You're just watching something else happen. You're worshiping something that doesn't get you any bigger than yourself. It's the difference between listening to music on your iPod and being at the concert. It's a different experience. And you can't explain it to somebody. And it doesn't matter if you've got the Bose headphones and you've got surround sound. And it doesn't matter. I see people walking through the airport, by the way, with these big Dr. Dre Beats headphones. Yeah? They think they're in the music. By the way, they're not embarrassed, which is also weird. Because, I wonder if these people could see other people like them if they would do it. But they walk around the airport like, you know, you see them walking around the streets in New York City, you're like, what are you doing? Like, the music is only occurring in here. You should not be dancing out here. It's weird. You know, but that's... It's still, as good as that is, it's not as good as being at the concert. It's not as good. I remember I had a friend of mine. We went to a concert together in ninth grade. I was a tiny little guy. I was like maybe 5'2". You know, I was tiny little ninth grader. I was skinniest little kid. And I had a very good friend of mine who was a hulk for a ninth grader. You know, he was like probably like 5'8". You know, and he was, you know, he's more well developed than I was. And we went to this concert, and he said, "You coming with me? I'm going into the mosh pit." And I said, "Are you crazy? You're gonna get killed." I said, "Look at those guys. These guys." And it was right there. I don't know if these words mean anything to you, but it was right in the middle of the, or in the beginning, I should say, of the Seattle grunge movement. So this was the first tour that Green Day had taken. They came to Nassau Coliseum. We were there at the concert, and he went into the mosh pit, and you see him get like swallowed alive. And the next thing I see, he's crowd surfing, and he's like, guys are throwing him, you know, because these guys are like these Seattle punk rock grunge Skecher wearing, you know, like, you know, the beat of there, and he's throwing him up in the air. And I'm thinking like, oh my God, that's crazy. And finally, like, they threw him out, and they, you know, he came back to Z, and he's like, that was amazing. I remember thinking to myself, like, that is not amazing. You just got thrown. That's like, you know, I've seen people do that at bar mitzvahs, you know, like, that's not amazing. But he had a different experience. I was at the concert, he was in the mosh pit. It's a different experience. It's a qualitatively different experience. When you're part of it, it means something bigger. When you worship it, you bring it into yourself. Ask yourself, what are the values in your life that you're worshiping? That's a powerful question. And if the answer to that is only myself, then there's something inherently wrong. And how many of us are leading lives that are purely and only for ourselves? That's a scary thing to ask. And the reason, here's the reason that you can't do anything, the reason why it's so difficult for you to bridge the gap between who I want to be and who I am is because you've lost control of yourself. And this is how you lost control of yourself. Because it started like, I don't want to follow the rules. I don't want to be restricted by the rules. When you were about 10, 11 years old, you started realizing, I don't want to be restricted by the rules. But you didn't have the guts at 10, 11 to be able to throw off the yoke. So by around the time you were 12, 13, you said, I've had enough. And you started throwing off the rules. So the first rules you threw off were the rules of your parents. And your parents learn as you became a teenager, your parents watched this transformation and they said, oh my God, what's happening to my child? And then you started throwing off the rules of the school. The school tells me that I have to do this. Well, I'm not necessarily going to do that. And you started throwing off the rules of maybe even HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Well, I don't want to do that. I want to do this. And you know, this is the whole thing today. You know, I ask kids, you keep Shabbos? And they go like this. Yeah. You know, like ish. I'm like, well, what does that mean? What does that mean? You keep Shabbos ish? No, I keep Shabbos, but you know, like I text. Well, I'm saying, you know, you could be driving a car because it's literally the same thing, you know. But they've thrown off the rules. But here's the thing: when you throw off everybody's rules, you also threw off one rule that you didn't realize was happening. You lost the rule of yourself because now yourself is not in charge. Now you have to obey your thirst. As Sprite once told us, obey your thirst. What do you mean obey my thirst? My thirst should obey me. Yeah, why am I obeying my thirst? And that's what happened. We lost control of ourselves. So when we talk about self-control, listen to the words now. Listen to how the words resonate with us. The self must be in control. How many people here, don't raise your hands because the answer is almost nobody. How many people here are disciplined enough in their life that they can say, I have self-control? The answer is almost nobody. Some of you have gotten better at it this year. But the answer is almost nobody. Yeah, I tried. Even myself. Even me. It was such a hard trip in terms of eating. I don't like to eat that way. I like to eat healthier. But you know, you're traveling around. Jeff's trying to get the Pats, trying to get a PKD. Mexico, sure. Trying to get... I got Traditions Wings. You know, I did it just for you, Michael. You shouldn't think I did it for anybody else. I got Traditions Wings just so that you could live vicariously through me, you know, at the Super Bowl. So it was like unbelievable. What was that?
Did you get poppers?
I didn't get poppers. I just got the wings. Next time I'll get poppers just for you. And Jigs, I feel you're looking at me like disappointed. Yeah. Oh, come on. It's amateur. Berg Amateur Hour. Ordered the wrong thing from Traditions. I'm out. You know, but the... guys, what I'm telling you is, even me, it's normal. It's very difficult to be able to maintain self-control. It's very hard. But the reason is because we've lost focus of the self, because we're worshiping things that make us smaller than ourselves, not make us bigger than ourselves. So you look at a guy who comes back from Eretz Yisrael, and you see, all of a sudden, the guy's learning. He's putting in more time in the Beis Medrash. He's putting in more time in davening. And something amazing happens. You look at this guy, and I'm telling you, I've seen it. I see my Talmidim now 5-6 years down the line. There's something amazing about them. They're called human beings. Yeah, all of a sudden in their lives, you ever look at these guys and see like, hey, maybe that guy has something figured out? Yeah, the reason is because they actually have something figured out. And what was it that they figured out? It was this lesson. I don't have to be as small as myself. See, small people are always worried about everybody else. Small people are like, well, I don't want to do this. Well, what are you so worried about? So don't do it. It's because they're terrified of becoming bigger than themselves because they're not even in control of themselves. And people, oh, I really wanted to wake up, but it's so difficult. Who says that? What adult says that? I don't know any adults that go, yeah, I really just want to wake up and go to my job in the morning, but it's so hard. I don't know, it's like really hard to wake up in the morning. Okay, what is that? It's if you're not in self-control, meaning if you've lost view of yourself, so then of course, that's what happens. So here's the question. We are holding now 6 weeks till the end of this Zman. And it's only a short 5 weeks Man, 6 weeks Man after Pesach. That's it. You are at the cusp. It is almost over. And I ask you guys now, reevaluate. Look at yourself in the beginning of the year and say, okay, what were my core values then? What was my life about? Look at it now. Look at the shifts. Some of them may have been smaller, some of them may have been bigger, but no doubt they're there for all of us. I hope so. If not, then we've lost something terrible, because everybody on some level should be shifting. Not because the yeshiva taught you something new, but because everybody in life should always be shifting. It's the hallmark of an adult to always be able to look at life new. It's the hallmark of the child to say, I've got it figured out. Only a child thinks they have it figured out. I tell you guys this all the time, and I'll tell it to you again. When I was 18, I thought my father knew nothing. I thought I was the one in charge. At 21, I realized my father knows a little bit more than I think he does. At 24, I realized my father knows a tremendous amount. At 28, I realized I cannot make a move without speaking to my father. He has so much life experience and wisdom. It would be so foolish of me not to tap into that. An adult knows how to shift. It's not major seismic shifts like when you're this age of like, I used to be like that, now I'm going to be like this. No, and people say to me all the time, I basically think I'm okay. Nobody's saying that you're not okay, but are you growing? growing? Are you becoming bigger than yourself? Can you point to the thing and say, I am comfortable being bigger than myself? If you can't do that, then there's something fundamentally wrong with your life, because your existence is being handled, but what purpose does your life have? What are you needed for? Let's finish with this Maimar Chazal. Im ein ani li mili, v'am ani la'atzmi ma'ani. If I'm only for myself, what am I? But if nobody else is going to be for me, I've got to take care of that. It means you are responsible for your own destiny. Im ein ani li mili. If I will not be for myself, who else will be for me? Nobody can lead your life. Jakes, I'm sorry, you can't leave your life vicariously through me. Next time I'll get poppers, but it won't help you. Im ein ani li mili. You've got to do it for yourself. But v'im ani la'atzmi ma'ani. But if my whole focus of myself is just this, then that's something very messed up. What am I living my life for? Who am I for? Who needs me? And then the Mishnah says a very curious thing. V'im lo achshav emasai. And if not now, when? Why is the Mishnah telling us, if not now, when? What does that have to do with this message? And I think that the answer is obvious. Because when you're focused on your life, and you're saying, I've got to do this, I've got to step up, nobody else can step up for me, but I'm going to make sure that I'm important. Not important in the sense of I'm going to be the center of the universe, but that I'm needed, that I'm necessary to Klal Yisrael, that I see Kiruv as a fundamental part of my life. That I have a home. Maybe we won't all go into chinuch, but every single person in this room should have a home that's open. My parents had over this Shabbos a beautiful, beautiful person, a cousin of my father. 15 years old. She's a girl from Philadelphia. This was the first Shabbos she ever kept in her life. She came, Motzei Shabbos, she came to my house. And I prepared my girls. I took my girls in. I said, you know, she's not going to be dressed in the way that you're used to. I said, but you know, she's family. She's a Jew. It happens to be she's my cousin, but she's a Jew. I said, please, talk to her. You know, make sure she feels comfortable. My girls were playing with her the whole time. And it was so great. It was so great. My parents showed this girl a taste of Shabbos. She's coming back to my parents in 2 weeks' time. She's here for 4 months. You know what type of kiruv my parents could do in 4 months for this girl? My mother, you know, my mother's a Baal Shuvah. She went straight for the jugular on this kid. You know, like, this kid is either going to go totally, like, I never want to be with observant Jews again, or this kid is becoming observant. Like, there are no two ways for this kid. And my mother went right for the jugular. Make your home a home of kiruv. When you see a Jew in your office, recognize, that's my brother. That's my hand. Chop onto that. Yeah, and some people are better at it, some people are worse at it, but do you have a home of Hachnasas Archim? I was walking in Teaneck, Ir HaKodesh. I was walking in Teaneck, and I have to tell you, I was sitting there, I was astounded. I was astounded by the size of the homes. I love them. I was astounded by the size of the homes. You walk around in Teaneck, it's unbelievable. Every home is bigger than the next. I'm not even talking about the really big homes. I'm just talking about the homes. Everyone's got a front yard and a backyard and a standalone house. Nobody has an attached house. I'm sitting there, I'm like thinking, you know, in Eretz Yisrael, I've got like one very big house, but four families live in it, you know. We don't have a backyard, we don't have a front yard, and yet somehow there's always room for Archim. How did that happen? Can you have a home of Archim? Can you be bigger for yourself? And the Mishnah is telling you a powerful thing in this process of growth that everybody could be a part of, to be bigger than themselves, to be attached to the Ribbono Shel Olam. V'im lo achshav emasai. So when's it going to happen? So when's it finally going to happen? You all came into this year with big dreams. Yeah? You waited for it. For many of you, you waited for it. It was just that opportunity to get to Eretz Yisrael, and then I'm going to turn it on. And Elul went by, and guys said, okay, but you know, like, that's the way it works, it's pre-Sukkos. Yeah, and then it was Sukkos, okay, that was like my opportunity. And then the yeshiva said, okay, now it's post-Sukkos. And most guys said, you know, many guys said, okay, let's get into it. But then there were guys that were like, I don't know, I heard Hanukkah time is the time when it really happens. And all of a sudden it was Hanukkah. And then by Hanukkah, somehow we were burnt out, even though nothing actually happened. We had that Hanukkah burnout. And then every time we turn around, we're on a teul. And then, you know, once a bird goes to America, nobody can learn. Like, it's impossible. Apparently, that's what happens. You know, v'im lo achshav emasai, guys. V'im lo achshav emasai. When's it going to happen? You've got 6 weeks. It doesn't matter if I'm here or I'm not here. It doesn't matter if the Rosh is here or if the Rosh is not here. I'm asking you right now, are you going to walk out of this year and be the same small person that you were when you walked in, or are you going to walk out and you're going to say, I'm the same person as when I walked in, but my life is infinitely huge because I have found something meaningful in my yadus that I never thought possible? that I can be bigger than my own Dalet Amos. When that alarm goes off in the morning, I don't check in with myself and go, I don't know if I'm okay to wake up. The Ribbono Shel Olam wants me to wake up. That's a powerful thing. That's a powerful thing. And what I'm challenging you guys to do now, to think about as you leave this year, hopefully for the rest of the day, is ask yourself, where is this all going? Ve'im lo achshav emasai. Ve'im lo achshav emasai. Right now is your chance. This is the opportunity you've been waiting for. It's February. And by the way, I want you to know there have been guys in yeshiva that have turned it on now, and some of the best guys that have ever come out of this yeshiva have turned it on right now. Don't think it's too late. Ve'im lo achshav emasai. If it doesn't happen right now, when's it going to happen? Next year? It's not going to happen next year. It's not going to happen next year. You know, in 5 years, 10 years, I'm telling you guys, it's not going to happen. There is a gravitational pull. There's a gravitational pull in life. You get busy. You get busy in life, and you stop living. This is your opportunity. This is your opportunity. So why couldn't you do it? It's because you've been focused on the wrong thing. It's all about me. It's all about what I deserve. It's all about what I want. Rebbe, I just can't. Yeah, and if you just can't, then you never will. But if you can realize I'm bigger than myself, that's an awesome opportunity. Don't blow the opportunity because it's once in a lifetime. It's awesome to be back with you guys. You have no idea how much I missed you. I cannot describe it. I cannot describe it, what it was like. I'm telling you, I was in, you know, one interview after another, it's awesome to be back. But the reason that it's awesome to be back is because this is really what I want to be doing. I want to be sharing this with you. Now you can give me a gift. Share it back with me. Share it back with me. What does it mean, share it back with me? It doesn't mean you need to come over to me and tell me, Rebbe, that was a great shiur. You can share with your Rebbeim. You can be bigger than yourself with your Rebbeim when you live these ideals. When you attach yourself something bigger to yourself. Guys, that's the greatest nachas I can have. Mirz Hashem, Purim's only a couple weeks away. Purim is coming up this week. Purim's only a couple weeks away. I can't wait. When the sod comes out, Mirz Hashem, everyone will be in the best of spirits. When the sod comes out for you to reveal, this is what I've been waiting for, just to be bigger than myself. Okay, I'll go.